Okay, we are in Netivot Shalom on Parshat Shmini, on page Lamed Zayin in the volume on Sefer Vayikra, in the piece Vayihi Bayom HaShmini. In many previous sessions, especially crossing over now, in regarding Sefirat Omer, but also many other places, you know, we've talked about the significance of 7, of 8, now in Sefirat Omer of 49, 7 times 7, and 51 above that as well. So when I saw this piece, I figured it would be a good opportunity to actually see inside, learn some of the sources, and see the Lashon of the Netivot Shalom on the importance of the dichotomy of 7 and 8. Okay? I thought about it. Okay. Why are we talking about Yom HaShemini at all? So it says, Vayihi b'yom HaShemini, in the beginning of the Parsha, Kara Moshe le'Aron le'vanav. So why is he calling out to him on the eighth day? It's actually a funny Parsha. It's like underratedly the second part of a two-part series. What? It's the eighth day. Eighth day of what? Do we even know? Anybody know? Need for physical education. Okay. So what happened at the end of Parshat Tzav, at the end of the previous Parsha, we had the inauguration of the Kohanim in preparation for the actual inauguration of the Mishkan itself. Moshe Rabbeinu puts up and takes down the Mishkan for 7 days. Then finally on the eighth day, the Mishkan is actually he successfully puts it up for 7 days, but on the eighth day it is successfully put up in a way that brings in the Shekhinah, and the Shekhinah comes down and the Mishkan becomes fully operational. So that's the eighth day that we're talking about, just to give context. So that's Parshat Shmini. Parshat Shmini is really the first day of the functioning of the Mishkan, and that happens intentionally after 7 days, which is really the very, very end of last week's Parsha. After 7 days of Aaron and his son sitting at the entrance of the tent of meeting, sitting at the entrance of the Mishkan, and waiting for it to power up, so to speak, to use a modern-day terminology, right? I don't know if God coming down and filling the Mishkan with his glory would be called powering up, but waiting for the Mishkan to power up, so to speak. And finally, on the eighth day, it comes to life. And that's where our parsha begins. So, Vayihi b'yom HaShemini, kara Moshe le'Aron u'levanav. So that's why he's calling out to them from their place of sitting in the tent of meeting, for them to actually start now getting to work. Meaning their whole life from now on is going to be serving God through the Mishkan. That's the job of the Kohanim. And he's calling them to begin their service of the Mishkan. So that's why he says next, Inyan Hakamata Mishkan, the whole concept of the establishment of the raising up of the Mishkan, by Yom HaShemini, eighth day, Lachar Kol Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, after all 7 days of the inauguration of the Mishkan, Behem Ikimu Upirku Bechol Yomata Mishkan, where they put up and took down the Mishkan for 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu did it himself, and only after this, by Yom HaShemini Hukama Mishkan, only then did the Mishkan stand, Shahayita Lo Tekuma, that it had, meaning it had establishment to it. It was going to be established for this place that's going to have the Shekhinah rest in it. Who could eat a bilikute Torah me'egon hakadosh Rav Chaim Vital Zal, as Rav Chaim Vital, one of the greatest Kabbalists that ever lived, said in Likute Torah, Shivat Yimei HaMiluim Hen Keneged Zayin Melachim Shemetu Vayom HaShemini Keneged HaMelech HaShemini Melech Hadar. Bo kvar lo nizkara mita, ki bechinat shmini hu tchilat ha-tikun. We are totally not going into that. But there is a scenario in Chumash which talks about 7 kings that rose and fall, and then an 8th king which stood, and it doesn't mention his death, and therefore stood eternally, which is the Rav Chaim Vital's way, on a very deep Kabbalistic level, utilizing an obscure piece of Chumash to talk about how 7 is about coming up and going down, and then 8 is eternal, which is exactly where we're headed. But we're not going to get into that particular issue at the moment. Umaran admorinu marinu v'rabenu b'beit Avram v'zichotei genelinu amar al vayihi b'yom ha-shmini she'inyan shmini hu shemit na'er legamrei meha'olam hazeh. Right, coming to concepts that we have tread upon before, that when you leave 7 behind, when you move past 7, then you move into, you leave olam hazeh. Right, you leave the Shivat Yimei HaBinyan behind, the 7 days of creation, the physical world, the limitations of the physical reality that we see around us, you leave them behind. Dishminihu lemala mishivat Yimei HaBinyan, which is actually exactly what we just said. Right, that 8 is one above the 7 days of creation, meaning one above and beyond the physical world as we experience it. Hainu lemala mikol inanei olam hazeh, one above this world. V'hu gvul hakidusha, and where we pass, we breach the line between this world and the line of Kedusha that transcends this world. Okay? Tov. Al-Kain. Bekol Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, for all of the 7 days of the Miluim, of this inauguration of the Mishkan, Haya Moshe Mekim Et HaMishkan U'Miparko, V'Rak Bayom HaShmini Hukam HaMishkan V'Amad. For those first 7 days, he would put it up and take it down, and it only was able to really stand and be established on the 8th day. Ki Yom HaShmini Hu Gvul HaKidusha B'Bchinat HaMelech HaShmini. Because the 8th day is that Gvul of Kidusha, meaning it needed to go up and down for 7 days, and it needed to breach the boundary of 7 and enter into the realm of 8, enter into the realm that is beyond the physical world, beyond the boundaries of the physical world, beyond Shivat Yimei HaBinyan, beyond Olam HaZeh, in order to breach the reality of Olam HaBa. Why did it need to breach the Gvul HaKidusha and the Gvul of Olam HaBa? Why?
Why did
the inauguration of the Mishkan and the Mishkan itself need to go through a process of 7, breach that boundary of 7 and reach into 8 in order for it to be established? Already thinking out loud, why would the two have to necessarily be linked?
Isn't that what life is about?
It's what life is about on the one hand. Also,
why do you need 7 to get to 8?
Why would the Mishkan? What is the Mishkan?
Eternal.
What is the Mishkan definitionally?
The connection between the two.
It itself is the connection between heaven and earth. Excellent. Exactly. Right? The Mishkan is the place where man meets God. Ohel Moed. Moed means the place, the tent of meeting. It's the point of connectivity between 7 and 8. It's the point of connectivity between Olam HaZeh and Olam HaBa. It's the point of connectivity between man and God. That's what the Mishkan functions as. It's the deepest place of closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The deepest point of connection, of encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why, as we've talked about in many other instances, what stands at the center of the Mishkan? What's the most internal chamber of the Mishkan?
Kodesh
HaKadoshim. Even deeper than the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So first of all, we need to breach into a reality of Kedusha, definitionally, if that's what's at the center of the Mishkan. Second of all, what's in the center of the Mishkan? We've talked about it before. And on top of the Aron? The Kruvim. The Kruvim, one representing man and one representing God. Literally embodying the fact that this place, its central goal, its purpose in existence, is to create that meeting place between man and God. That's why in the Kodesh HaKadoshim you have the Kruvim gazing lovingly into each other's eyes. Or, unfortunately, alternatively, says the Gemara, when we don't do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, miraculously turning away from each other. The central, what the lifeblood of the Mishkan is the connectivity between heaven and earth, between man and God, between the physical and the spiritual. That's what the Mishkan is all about. And so it goes through the process of 7 to reach 8 and exists in a reality of 8. It exists in a reality of one step beyond. It's our stepping stone to the infinite. Tov. Bederech HaEfshar, thinking out loud, just as we were talking about it now, I'd never thought about this before. I always assumed Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning to be this kind of strong emphasis that not only is there a Kodesh and Kedusha is central to the Mishkan, but so much so that we're going to call it the Kodesh HaKadoshim at the center of the Mishkan. I wonder, Bederech HaEfshar, I wonder if it's not just for the purpose of emphasis, if Kodesh HaKadoshim is used in a double lashon to imply a duality of relationship of Kedusha on both sides that's necessary for the functioning of the Mishkan. That it's not just the emphasis, but it's actually the double lashon of Kedusha, because it's a place where two parties exist, and where the functioning of the Mishkan only works where both entities that are at the heart and soul of the Mishkan are functioning on a level of Kedusha. B'derech HaEfshar. Thinking out loud. I don't know if we like that or not, but could be.
Isn't Hashem's Kedusha always like so much greater than ours? So like, how could we even like equate it in a way?
Kedoshim mitzihiyu. Why? Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. That's the charge to us in Parshat Kedoshim. Kedoshim to you. You should be kadosh. Why? Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. Our whole striving in this world is to achieve kedusha that would make us, that would allow us to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But
right.
He makes that equation in His command to us. Not that we would ever be equated to God at any level, but to strive for kedusha as much as possible, to get as close as possible to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kedusha.
Right.
I mean, if you really want to take this and drive it forward, and again, none of this is musad on anything other than my own thoughts, but maybe the kodesh is relating to us, and the kodashim is relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning the source of all layers of kedusha belongs to God, and we're trying to at least establish ourselves as kadosh. B'derech Hashar. Food for thought. So, in any event, that's the relationship. I mean, inherently in 7 and 8, that's going to be embedded in the Mishkan itself, and that's why it's going to go through a process of Shivat Yimei HaMiluim and then come about. That's also the pasuk, and meaning each. If you were to think of a word to describe somebody who lives a reality of kedusha, who makes themselves a Mishkan, what word would you use? That person's a what? What word do you use that we use is colloquially to refer to somebody who's on a very high spiritual level? That person's a tzaddik. I mean, that wasn't a hard reach. And we have a pasuk, I believe, in Mishlei. Shiva yipol tzaddik v'kam. Which many understand as that part of the process of becoming a tzaddik, just like the Mishkan, is the tzaddik goes up and down 7 times until he breaches into the level of becoming in a place of 8 and establishes himself in a place of kedusha beyond. Shiva yipol tzaddik v'kam. Oto davar.
Do you remember how you said that 7? I didn't really understand it. Only breaks down to 7 and 7.
When we talked about Sefirat HaOmer.
Yeah, you said mm-hmm. that. Well, because I asked the question of why specifically does it say 7 times do you fall when you fall many more than that? Like what the significance of that number is.
The tzaddik in becoming a tzaddik is going to have to fall 7 times. He's going to have to engage all levels of reality. And when he's finally able to stand, that's when he overcomes the challenges of the physical world and stands in purity on the level of Shmini.
So it's not specifically 7 times?
It is specifically 7. Every level of reality.
All the other times. What do you mean?
He has to, meaning I think the implication of the pasuk on a spiritual level is he has to at least fall or at least experience challenge on each of the 7 layers of reality.
What does that mean? What are the 7 levels of reality?
Whether it be Yom Rishon, Yom Shini, Yom Shishi, Yom Revi'i, Yom Chamishi, Yom Shishi, and Shabbat. Whether it be literally the Shivat Yimei HaBinyan, the 7 building blocks of the created world. We constantly recycle ourselves through the basic fundamental of reality that is 7. Or on a Kabbalistic level, which the two mirror each other. The 7 building blocks of Kabbalah, which we've been talking about in the other shirim, of the 7 primary or the 7 lower sefirot. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Nefesh, Hod, Yesod, and Malchut.
Okay, so different.
And even if it's just coming into challenge with that and succeeding, I don't think Yipol has to necessarily mean failure. Has to trip over it. He can catch himself.
Right.
Yosef HaTzadik doesn't, Baruch Hashem, and Chas V'Shalom, the Seisha thing, doesn't fail in the Midah of Yisod when he's challenged by Eshet Potiphar, but he is legitimately challenged in that moment of Eshet Potiphar to the extent that he needs to see an image of his father in order to overcome. That challenge defines his life and sets him on a course of Kiddushah to become Yosef HaTzadik, overcoming the 6th level and moving into Shabbat, and whatever else goes into all of that without going into any of that. But that happens, and then he's able to come forward. Avraham Avinu goes through 10 nisyonot, and then finally Akedas Yitzchak at the end. He doesn't fail, but he struggles.
Right.
It doesn't sound like it implies just going through a struggle. It sounds like you're actually falling in terms of like madrigos or like something. You are failing to a certain extent if you're falling. It's not just to your hip within Yisayon. That wouldn't be falling.
So I'm just want to be careful about that because my understanding is that the definition of a tzaddik against the way that we normally relate to it is he who doesn't fall. Meaning usually the way that in deeper sources, the way that they're contrasted is the tzaddik is contrasted to the Baal Tshuva. But a Baal Tshuva definitionally is the one who made the mistake and to his great credit did Tshuva and comes to a place where even a tzaddik can't stand. But that implies that the tzaddik never actually falls. So what's Sheva Yipol Tzaddik become? I understand it as that the tzaddik has to go through a challenge on every level of reality that is a legitimate challenge for that person. In a way where, I mean, you could have said like, meaning you could, you, let's be the critical parent for a second, right? Step into the shoes of the overly critical parent. What were you doing with her in the house in the first place? I don't care that you left your cloak behind and ran out. What were you doing there in the first place? You deserve to be in jail. You know, like, that critical, you know, looking like, how did you end up there? You know, so the answer is perhaps Yosef, and in fact, Chazal are critical of Yosef for having been in the house in Yichud with her at that particular time. Not so simple. So did he fall? He entered himself into a challenging situation, which he did not easily overcome, when perhaps, if he's Yosef HaTzadik, so why didn't he just dance out of the house? What was the struggle? Why did he even get into the conversation? How did he grab it? How did she grab his cloak? How did he get that far? So I would claim, again, le'aniyut dati, my humble opinion, that that is the hapala of the tzaddik. If a person doesn't experience challenge in life, then they're dead. Not sinning and having to do tshuva, that's the tzaddik. That's a real definition of a tzaddik. A bal tshuva is a different type of thing. And its own madrega, and incredibly powerful. And in fact, when you really want to talk about it, as long as we've, I mean, when one starts talking about tzaddik, I immediately move to Yosef, who's the paradigm of the tzaddik. He's the only one who we actually refer to as HaTzaddik. And there's a reason why he gets that name, is because he doesn't sin. In contrast to whom in those parshiot? Yehuda. And all of the cataclysmic craziness that goes on between Yosef and Yehuda in those parshiot, setting the stage for the ultimate coming together of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, and the uniting of the Mashiach that's in the image of the Tzaddik and the Mashiach that's in the image of the Baal Tshuva. But who's the final stage? The Tzaddik or the Baal Tshuva? Who's the final stage? Yosef or Yehuda? Mashiach ben Yosef or Mashiach ben David? Not a trick question. Mashiach ben David, come on. Mashiach ben David. Meaning, that's a very powerful statement. That somehow, while there's a necessary prerequisite of a stage of a Mashiach of a Tzaddik, the Mashiach of the Baal Tshuva is the one that's going to be eternal.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's not, it's like the opposite of being human. Like, you're supposed to, you know?
Does that mean one should aspire to sin in order to do Tshuva?
No,
that's heresy.
I'm saying, so you think Yosef was just a special individual? Like most.
Yosef made, that's why it's more powerful to me to say no. Yosef made the choice to be a tzaddik. But that means that there needs to be a choice involved. Meaning, he did not fall with Eshet Potiphar. Yehuda made a mistake. Whatever the mistake may have been, in the reality of what happened with Tamar, to the extent where it's not even hard to say that because he admits him. I think the Pesukim are incredibly explicit about his admitting that he sinned. Yeah, as you, what were you going to say?
I just think it's weird that he's. Is it because of that that he's the main Mashiach?
I mean, chicken and I don't like getting into chicken and egg questions. But meaning, thank you. Does it mean meaning who is going to inevitably? Is Yehuda a Baal Tshuva because he sins, or does he sin because he's a Baal Tshuva? Like Kilu, it's hard.
No, I'm just wondering because if a tzaddik is lower than a Baal Tshuva.
It's different.
It's not lower.
It's not lower, meaning...
No, I'm saying because we say Malachim, let's say, like, to be more extreme, Malachim versus humans, so that's not ideal, because, well, it's a totally different thing, forget. But if he didn't mess up at all, like, he didn't sin, and he didn't do Tshuva, you would think that that's better.
You would.
So then what's the deal? Like, are we supposed to...
Judaism is the difficult process of spending a lifetime undoing the seemingly obvious assumptions and reorienting to the truth of Torah, which is very often, if not always, the opposite of our initial assumptions.
Well, I'm just asking from a place of, are you supposed to aspire? Like, are you supposed to try to be more like Yosef or Yehuda?
We are always, of course, supposed to aspire to be a tzaddik or tzaddiket, because if we don't do, meaning if you sin intentionally, then your tshuva is irrelevant.
Well, it doesn't intentionally, but there are ways to prevent, like, to be even more, I'm forgetting the word, like, to be even more careful and to be more like Yosef. It's possible.
And if one has that capacity inside of them, one should absolutely do that. My point simply is some people will fill the necessary role of the tzaddik, and some people will fulfill the necessary role of the Baal Tshuva. But both are tremendously lofty in ways where it's not so simple who's better. It's not so simple who's more important, and I would say perhaps that might be an irrelevant question. Because without Mashiach ben Yosef, you will never get Mashiach ben David. And without Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be irrelevant. Without Yosef paving the way for Yehuda and Yaakov to come down to Mitzrayim, then they wouldn't have been able to go down, and they wouldn't have been able to accomplish what they accomplished. And on the other hand, had Yosef gone down and the brothers never followed, what would have been the point? We very often like to look at things more concretely, but reality is more fluid than that. Both are necessary components. And to really make it as concrete as possible, to what meaning is 8 is 7 without 6? You'll never get to 7. But 6 alone doesn't get you to completion at 7. And that's literally on a numerical level. If you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, you're just incorrect. If you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you haven't reached the ultimate goal of 7 if 7 is your goal. And that's very much what Yehuda and Yosef are about. Yosef is 6 and Yehuda is 7. Or David is 7, meaning eventually David HaMelech is the one who brings 7 into the world in the level of Malchut. But the structure of how that happens and each person's role in that is much more complex and deep and meaningful than we often give it credit for. And then 7 to 8. The Shivat Yimei Miluim, did anything happen? No. Mishkan didn't go up. What was the point? The answer is yes. Something cosmic happened. We put it up and took it down for 7 days. We accomplished something each day that allowed us to burst through on the 8th day to a realm of Kedusha. Does that make 7 less or more important? I don't know, and is that question necessarily even meaningful?
Also, I think there's a lot of factors why Yehuda, like certain leadership, like there's tons of reasons why he was Mashiach and not David. I'm sure that's not the only, no?
I mean,
like, I don't think it's a contradiction that because Yosef was a tzaddik and he was a Baal Tshuva, that like Yosef should have been the real, like the main Mashiach. There's much more involved, probably.
I not only don't think it's a contradiction, I think it's a necessary prerequisite. Yehuda needs to be Yehuda, and in fact, David HaMelech, the Gemara tells us in Gemara and Avodah Zarah that the only reason why David HaMelech came to sin was just the ways of tshuva. And David HaMelech becomes the source of Mashiach. The source of that means the Gemara is telling us that in order to get to Mashiach, what do you need? Tshuva. Now that's really odd. Is it a necessary prerequisite? But I thought we want to be a tzaddik. I want to be a tzaddikas. How does that work? Let's get even more complex. What does it mean that one of the things that was created before the world was tshuva? That seems that there's a presumption that tshuva is going to be a necessary requirement to fulfill the goals of the world. It's a totally different way of looking at reality. Things are complex.
Was created before
the world? Chazal. It's on the list of things that was created before the world itself was created.
What else is on the list?
Cool things for another time. but that's the idea. And that's what we're saying here again, whether it's 6 to 7 or 7 to 8, we've kind of regressed in our numbers to 6 and 7. But from 6 to 7 or from 7 to 8, each one of those is a necessary step in that process. One great minhag chassidim, which I saw in many shtiblach in the area, what day does the Mishkan actually go up? Good thing to know, put on your calendars, celebrate. Historically, what day did the Mishkan go up? The first day of the month of Nisan. That's why in many shtiblach also on the opposite side. So then for the next 12 days, many shtiblach read one of the gifts of each of the shvatim going forward, each of the days, because the 12 days of the gift offerings to the newly inaugurated Mishkan start on the first day of Nisan. But so there are many shiblach around here, right or wrong, I'm not commenting on the nature of the practice, but I had a lot of students who daven around the area who were like, the shul's not davening tachanun today, why? And I was like, it took me a minute to reorient myself, if you're a shtibl that, and there are many shtibls and many strains of Judaism that do this, try to remove tachanun at any given possible point in time. So one of the things that actually falls on the list are the 7 days before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. they don't say Tachanun during the Shivat Imei HaMiluim. Now, again, right or wrong in Jewish practice is irrelevant, but that's a reflection of, somewhere along the way, somebody pointing out, not just that it's important that the Mishkan went up, but that every single step of the hachana, of the preparation, of the necessary prerequisite to getting to that Mishkan, is so significant that we're not even saying Tachanun. The preparation is just as important. And that duality of recognizing that and taking that to heart. That those two are significant. So that seven is very important. Conquering that the seven hapala of the tzaddik, regardless of whether or not we want to understand the pasuk as actually messing up or being in a challenging state or whatever, however you want to understand the pasuk, doesn't matter to me. Whether it's literally falling or only coming to a point of challenge where one might have fallen, that's what makes that person a tzaddik. And without that, they're not a tzaddik. A person who simply rides out life and has everything given to them, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never let it happen this way anyway. But if a person were just born into this world and faced no challenge, and therefore was a tzaddik, is a meaningless tzaddik. And no tzaddik that you will read about, whether their biography has been whitewashed or not, doesn't matter. You will certainly find adversity within their biography, because that's what made them who they are. Which makes it just as important. Let's take it one more example further. I believe it's Alpi Kabbalah, from where I heard this. I never saw the source inside. And I think I heard it from Reiki Vitatz in one of his shiurim. The concept that originally in Gan Eden, the trees and the fruit, I mean, that's really an understanding. Rashi brings that up in terms of the Pesukim, that the trees and the fruit were supposed to have the same taste. Right? And then the trees sinned by only bearing fruit that tasted like fruit, and the trees themselves didn't taste like the fruit. But, I heard this from Reiki Vitatz, I think, says in Latid Lavo, then we'll go back to a state of Gan Eden, and the trees and the fruit will both have the same taste of the fruit themselves. Again. Why? What does that mean? What's the spiritual meaning of that physical reality? Is that the process and the product are just as sweet. That's the meaning of trees and fruit. It's process and product. Latid lavo, when we go and we get to the world to come, the process and the product are equally sweet. Because everything that we experience in the world to come is no more and no less than what we achieved in Olam Hazeh, and therefore when we look back, we suddenly enjoy not just the fruits of our labor, but the labor itself. Which means, and just to plug us back into our piece, to make sure we're at least discussing the inyan of what we're involved in. What is Olam Hazeh? What is Shivat Yimei HaBinyan? What have we been talking about? The 7 days of this world. So therefore, what is Olam Haba? What number is it correlated with? Eight. Meaning, seven and eight in the world to come will both be meaningful, will both bear fruit, will both taste sweet. Because eight is only meaningful after having gotten there through seven. Yes.
Why are we saying davening loli denisayim? Like, what's
a person chas v'shalom should never ask for a test.
But we don't ask. But we ask for not to.
Yeah.
We ask not to be tested. So that's saying that we don't believe that in order to become a tzaddik, you need to be tested.
No, we say to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, I don't want to be tested. I'm not looking for extra tests.
So you're saying I don't want to be a tzaddik.
No, you're saying I don't want any.
You need to be tested in order to be a tzaddik.
Right. I'd rather it not be through nisayon. I'd rather it, but whatever it not through be, through nisayon. So God, whatever you have in mind, do that no more, no less. But I'm not looking for anything else. That was one of the mistakes of David HaMelech. Because he turned to God and said, I think it's in the Gemara. He says, I'm ready for anything. Give me something new. Because you want something new, meet Batsheva. Right? and that's something that we learned is one should not do. So of course we daven that we don't want them. We recognize the difficulty that they entail, but then when they come our way, we're meant to embrace them. I only want what you need for me, no more, no less, and I ain't looking for anything more. Because I don't want an opportunity to fail, I don't want an opportunity to fall, I don't want an opportunity to do a sin against you. But if you're bringing something my way, then I know it's because I need it, I'm meant to overcome it, you want me to overcome it, and I can overcome it because you brought it my way. Not because I stupidly asked for it. Not that I don't know the stupid culture, I'm saying, not that I stupidly asked for it. Right. In all good movies, the guy who says, bring it on, is always the guy you're rooting to fall down. Because it indicates ego, and ego is always going to be one's downfall. Tof. So we did, in fact, touch upon a lot of levels of 7 and 8 in the time that we had. And they are, in all the ways that we discussed, essential to the Mishkan. And I think perhaps, ironically, even more important than the discussions that we had about the meaning of 6 was... Well, the meaning of 7 was the meaning of... The meaning of 8 was the meaning of 7. And something which is also just you'll find very much throughout Chassidut. The importance of preparation in Hachana is actually a very strong Hasidic concept. That the Hachana in Chassidut is sometimes even more important than, more significant than the actual product itself, because of a recognition of the fact that the process is what gives the product meaning. And that the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim were incredibly important in that they brought about this reality of tremendous Kiddusha that's Kvod Hashem Aleihat HaMishkan, to quote from the wrong place, I'm actually quoting from the end of Shemot there, but that's what happens at the in Yom HaShmini, when God's glory finally fills the Mishkan, that only happens because of the seven. That's why it's Moshe Rabbeinu of all people. It's not delegated to, it's not like Yoshua calls, Moshe calls in reinforcements and says, hey Yoshua, I've got things to do, can you put up and down the Mishkan because it's not day 8 yet. Moshe does it. Each one of those 7 days, by himself. There's an indication there it can only happen through Moshe, and how important that is to get to Yom HaShemini, where we reach that reality of Kedusha, and we bring about a reality where heaven breaches earth, and earth breaches heaven. And we create a reality of the Kriyim, and the reality of the Anan of Hashem coming in, the reality of man and God meeting on 8, is through the preparatory stages that we do to make that happen. So Bezrat Hashem, we should all be able to embrace the preparation that is life, to eventually embrace the 8 that is Olam Haba, to be able to work during the Sheshet Yemei HaBinyan to reach Shabbat, or to not just achieve Yom HaShvi'i, but to allow Yom HaShvi'i be Shabbat, which itself contains 8. That's the movement from 7 to 8, even within Shabbat itself. And to enjoy the meeting of the meeting between heaven and earth, between God and man, in our lives, in the Mishkanot that we carry around ourselves in each one of us. Bezrat Hashem.